Hi, everybody. I'm Pete. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and at a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. I was so much looking forward to being here tonight, and it's a little bit mixed for me. I'm excited about being here and sharing, but the way schedule allows it and what my spirit is moving to do is finish up tonight. And I've met some friends that I have for a while and have found many newfound friends in this group. And it has been one of the bright spots on this journey God has given me. Big Book says, see to it that my relationship with Him is right and great events will come to pass for me and countless others. And this has been just a great, wonderful time for me. You know, again, I want to thank Chris and Maribeth and this group and for this kind invitation to me to keep coming back. After my first visit here, there's places who I come to and I say, well, you don't have to come back next week. It's okay. So it's been a really neat deal. I can't thank all of you enough either for being here and taking this journey over the last 14 weeks with me. The questions you guys have asked me, not only great questions, but in your questions, I knew you were with me for the hour. The comments and questions before and after the meeting and all the phone calls and the emails, it's been truly, indeed miraculous. It's been wonderful. And so I thank all of you for making this a pretty neat deal over the last 14 weeks. But Spirit moves you to move and you move. And I think another week longer, it would be more of Peter looking to stay here, me looking to stay here, than my spirit having me be here. So with God's help, we will finish up our 12-step and throw it up to some questions and like we usually do. And again, I really, from the bottom of my heart, I thank everyone for allowing me to be here for the last 14 weeks. It's been a pretty neat deal. I get to do some traveling out, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I visited a couple of different parts of our country over the last couple of weeks. And we've got pockets of enthusiasm all over. People doing this deal, people on fire. I was in Arizona a couple of weeks ago and met some adolescents, 17 to 24 years old. And out of about 60 of these kids, I would say a third of them were just doing the deal and they were on fire, looking for more. And I get to visit Louisiana and there's a whole core of people just doing this, commencing shoulder to shoulder our common journey and a message we can absolutely agree upon. And encountering resistance in their little groups, their little home groups, and feeling like the odd man out because they have a big book under their arm at an AA meeting. But they keep on the firing line and trudge the road, a happy destiny like we all do, and it's great. It's just a really good deal. So I thank you, really, for allowing me to be here. We last left off, we closed up on page 18, and we did a lot of going back and forth with step 12. We talked about sponsorship, primary purpose, singleness of purpose. And I just want to clear something up. I talk a whole lot because it's what I'm about is one drunk working with another and an alcoholic working with another alcoholic. And there are people in here who maybe have other addictions. And never, ever, ever do I look to invite anyone out of here or throw anyone out of here. And if that message came across, that's not what I was saying. I won't apologize for it because that's not what I said, but I just want to be clear that it isn't about throwing anyone out of Alcoholics Anonymous, but it is an AA meeting, and we like to talk about alcohol at an AA meeting for identification. Our life depends upon it. So I get that often when anytime I talk about singleness of purpose, chairs shift. And I had some really neat questions after the last session pertaining to that. And to those people, thank you for those questions and considerations. So it's all good, all good. We talked about what kind of message is our group carrying, our home groups. Tradition 5 talked about us being a spiritual entity. Passing this message on, what is my home group doing about carrying a message to another alcoholic? You know, are we carrying a message, our message? Are we carrying a message that woke us up? from the big book Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the dilemmas many of us have, and I spoke to a gentleman early, and I get it all the time, and I totally relate to it because I struggled with it for years, is when we want it for someone more than they do, and you need to go on and move to someone else, and how difficult that can be. Sometimes it's heartbreaking because you know where they're going. We talked a little bit about that. What kind of message is my group carrying? What kind of message am I carrying? Am I bringing joy to my group and to people's lives? Am I carrying this message into my home occupation affair, which I'd like to talk about tonight a little bit, practicing these principles, part of our 12-step. We talked a whole lot about work with others and 12-step calls, which we don't talk about a lot now, folks, Anonymous. Rehab's created, you know, feelings and issue monsters in Alcoholics Anonymous. And how often do we get to make 12-step calls and keep on the firing line and get a wet drunk in a room? I think I shared a couple of weeks ago, I was in a meeting in Brooklyn, and a drunk walked in wet, and people said, "Oh, my God, he's drunk." And I said, "Well, it's an AA meeting. Where else are you going to go?" So he goes to a bar and says, "I want a drink." The bartender will say, "What are you having over here? Maybe we can show him how not to." So it's almost a lost deal in Alcoholics Anonymous about, you know, working with others, the ones who come in right off the street who are wet, and we nurse them through. We walk with them through those dark and lonely nights. I've done it. It's been done for me. I was in Minnesota a really short time, and it was about 2:30 in the morning. I was climbing the walls. It was on me. And I made a phone call to a gentleman that I happened to take his number, and I found it. And how I made this phone call was really divine intervention. And I thought it was going to wake him up, and he was up watching a little TV. And he sat with me until I was able to make some prayers, settle down, and get through that night. Because I don't know if it wasn't for this guy, Steve, from Minnesota, if I would have gotten through that night. And over and over and over again, last time we talked, it's what we do. And God forbid if we should forget that. One drunk worker with another. We have conferences, we have spiritual breakfasts, we have big book workshops, we have wonderful things. Let's never ever forget, it's one drunk working with another. One alcoholic touching another alcoholic's heart. Language of knowledge, language of experience turns into language of the heart. And we watch people wake up. Page 68 says, God will demonstrate to us what we can do. Great responsibility and great amount of power that God gives us to do this. This is what we do. And then we take it into other places, into our affairs, our home, our occupations. I was looking at Pass It On, and there's some pretty neat things that I'd like to touch on real quick before we get into our book. There's a story about Bill and Lois, and Contemporary A will have you believe all you have to do is not drink today and you're a winner, and disregard the people we've harmed on the way into Alcoholics Anonymous. And part of our 12 step is to practice these principles in all our affairs, not the affairs that are convenient for us, like an AA meeting where I can be a spiritual giant for an hour and go home and be an alcoholic without a drink in me. And our big book talks about homes, occupations, and affairs, which is where we take this stuff. And they list homes first. We need to go back there and make amends. Certainly have to do that for the harm we've caused. And then we take this awakened spirit into our home. And we treat people the way they ought to be treated. And we watch those people wake up because of our spirit. We watch that home change. I've shared this a million times. We go into a drunk's house, we pull them out. And the wife is saying, "Get him out of here." Or she's saying, "When is he coming home?" With fear, and the house looks like a drunk, and then that guy wakes up, or that woman wakes up, and gets these principles, and has an awakening result of these steps. And you go back into that house a few minutes later, not only does the family look different, but the house looks different. That's what God allows us to do. When all are falling short in thought, word, and deed. So we take these principles there. But what happens along the way, Family Efforts talks about years of living with an alcoholic will make any wife or child neurotic. The whole family is to some extent ill. This illness levels everything in our path besides us. And there's a deal here. I remember when I read this, it was just so to the point. In Pass It On, Bill is finishing up his famous Armistice Day drunk. And after a golf outing where he had told a guy all about him not drinking, and then goes and drink anyway. And he was living in Brooklyn, and this is how Bill shows up. It says, the next morning about 5 o'clock, Lois, that's his wife, found me unconscious in the areaway of 182 Clinton Street. I, falling against the door, was bleeding heavily from a bad scalp wound. My hand still clutched the strap of the golf bag. As I regained consciousness, nothing much was said. Now, normally, if you found someone laying in your driveway bleeding, like a husband or wife, you'd be, oh, my God, you know, call 911. Because nothing was said. Indeed, there wasn't anything to say. And here's it. This is it. It says, we both hit an all-time low. Lois was not an alcoholic, but he says, we both hit an all-time low. Because they get sick like us without a drink in them. Because of what alcoholism does. And he's writing this story how he and his wife hit a low called from alcoholism. And he's the drinker. You see what goes on? And then you'll go to an AA meeting, a contemporary AA meeting, and they'll tell a newcomer, all you have to do, kid, is not drink today. Well, let's go home and ask his wife if that's okay. Or his children. Or his employer. Or the dog. Or the cat. If that's really okay. So we hear that, and I relate to my own story about when my family, it became very matter of fact that I wasn't coming home. The ambulance was coming and get me. I was locked up again. This is okay, let's go get him, or let's not get him, let's throw him out, because they become numb to it also, and my job is to go back there and fix that, some of that stuff. So when I say practice these principles in all our affairs, you can see the importance of it. One of the things about going through these 12 steps and getting squeezed along the way, in the discipline we get squeezed, but we wake up and we get free, is that you will not experience any kind of relief, permanent relief. You won't. You'll experience some relief along the way, but it won't be permanent. What you will experience is freedom. And there's a big difference between experience a little bit of relief from time to time and freedom. Because we get to a place, and it's one word, it's called bliss. And from being leveled in the street like we were, whether it's Park Avenue or Park Bench, we get leveled, and we get to a place where we can experience freedom and be of maximum service to God and the people about us. That is certainly a spiritual awakening. That is enlightenment. That is a great thing that I don't deserve, and it's been given to me freely. All I have to do is follow some simple rules. It's way beyond showing up at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's one side of our legacy, but it's way beyond this. It's way beyond what we get. Instead of coming to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous where it's a second column meeting, we dump our dramas of life for an hour and a half about how they're doing this to me, or she don't see it my way, and it goes on and on. Alcoholics Anonymous should be a pep rally for the power of God and what it does to others and how we can share our experience from this power, with this power, this current experience with this power. So when someone comes in, they're not wondering after the hour's up, well, how do I stay sober? Because I heard Bill, Charlie, and Frank talk about their boss and their wife. I still don't know how to stay sober. And what we ought to be doing is saying, this is what my God has done for me, and I'm ready to give it to you, because you can wake up too. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous ought to be about, because that's how it was. You want to talk about our dramas of life, call up the sponsor and pester him or her. Or go to a diner. On page 101, and you have to go there, but page 101 talks about this shield, shielding a man. And once the shield is taken down, we go on a bigger spree than ever. And I sat with that. And we have shields. We have them that call rehabs and detoxes. We have shields. They're called meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, where an AA new person will come here and feel safety or comfort in the numbers here. And we run, because I've done it, run from meeting to meeting to meeting. Make the 1 o'clock, make the 3 o'clock, make the 5 o'clock, make the 7 o'clock, and hopefully fall asleep tonight and get up and make the first early morning meeting and just bang out meeting after meeting after meeting. It's a shield. We hide out in Alcoholics Anonymous. The same way an alcoholic goes into a detox and rehab and hides out for 5 days or 28 days. And some of those alcoholics have a desperate desire to go to any lengths to recover because they've experienced the bitter end, like I did. What kind of message are we passing on to those ready, willing, and able students who show up? Those alcoholics who show up looking for something. They talk, William James talks about varieties of religious experience, how we have to be basically broken down. where self-reliance is taken away from us, before we can be built up again. So we have people who come in here, like many of us show up at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, after the detox, after the rehab, where no solution was given, no God was presented to them, but they come here. And so we do the AA shuffle. We run from meeting to meeting to meeting. Are we offering that prospect a solution called God and how to get to it? The instructions, how to go from point A to point B and help them connect the dots. So they come in here with nothing like I did, in a state of obsession like I did, and then one day we get past that free and willing to sponsor someone because I'm on with the facts. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what we do. And that's a consideration. Is my group doing that? And if they're not, I ought to call them on it. Am I doing that? If I'm not, I need to wake up. Okay. Let's go to page 94. Assuming I have this prospect and I believe he or she's a real alcoholic and I sit down with them, on page 94, it says, I outline the program of action. First paragraph, explaining how I made a self-appraisal, how I straightened out my past, and why I'm endeavoring to be helpful to him. It's important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in my own recovery. Actually, and here's a force feeding of humility, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. So I got this drunk who's falling apart, this alcoholic is broken down with nothing, and I start to work with him. And I need to let them know that you're being more of service to me than I am to you. Sometimes it's sponsors up here, and the prospect is way down here. Somewhere we got this term, we call these prospects pigeons. They're children of God who are sick and dying. My job is to help them. It says, make it plain that he is under no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Make it clear he's not under pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. Here's a question to consider. Is my talk been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding? If it is, perhaps I've made a friend, right? Many people have come to me for help, and we've just remained friends. And they sought other sponsors, and we've been able to maintain friends. Sometimes that doesn't happen. I've been left some ugly messages on my machine at home. You know why? Because I learned a long time ago, you can't lie to an alcoholic. And as a sponsor, you have to serve truth when they don't see it. And no one wants to see truth. And some of us get angry when we hear it from the sponsor, when our feathers are ruffled, when we disturb people on a question of alcoholism. I know I get angry when it was done to me. Now I just appreciate it because I know the value in it. Can't lie to an alcoholic. We share our experience, strength, and hope. And we need to serve truth. It's a great responsibility I have. The great thing about one alcoholic working with another, we know... I know where that alcoholic's been the way they know where I've been when I came in here. I'm so grateful for people who were doing this deal when I showed up not that I was anything special, but I was a new alcoholic walking in the door. And he says, there's a new one. We need to pass this on. Bob refers to Bill as he spoke my language. There's a story in Pass It On how Bill refers to Ebby as he was able to walk into this cave where Bill was. Because he knew it, and walked out confidently while other people had to watch. The non-AAs had to watch. Because Ebby knew Bill and knew where Bill was and how to pull him out of there. It's a great thing we're able to do. How we use our past experiences to currently help others. It says, maybe you have disturbed them on the question of alcohol, and this is all to the good. The more hopeless he or she feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions. Now it says, your candidate may give reasons why he need not follow all of the program. He may rebel at the thought of a drastic house cleaning, which requires discussion with other people. And that's one of the any lengths a lot of people are not willing to go to. Do not contradict such views. Tell him you once felt as he does, but you doubt whether you would have made much progress had you not taken action. On your first visit, tell him about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and nowadays a lot of people know about us. If he's interested, lend him a copy of your book. And one of the things I do with people, most of us have copies of this book, but I ask them to do some reading. Someone comes to me, it's their first time through Alcoholics Anonymous. Most often I'll tell them, when they ask me to sponsor them, before we do that, I ask them to go home and read the first portion of this book. It says we ask them to read this book in the interval. And for me, that was the first portion of this book, from the cover to page 164. I had them do some little things to help them get through the reading, like look for a word called must. There are a lot of musts in Alcoholics Anonymous in the program. They say there are no musts in AA, in the fellowship there aren't, but in the program there is. And I'll have them look for these words, and I'll ask them to read through the first 164 pages. And then when they're done, that's my second visit. I'll ask them if they're ready to go through these 12 steps, if they're willing to go to any length to seek this experience, if they're convinced at this point that they're an alcoholic. And I'll throw some other considerations out to them, and at that point, we begin this journey, and we walk through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's for someone who's coming to me for the first time who's never been through the work. Page 95 says, unless your friend wants to talk further about himself, do not wear out your welcome. Give him a chance to think it over. If you do stay, let him steer the conversation any direction he likes. Sometimes a new man is anxious to proceed at once, and you may be tempted to do so. This is sometimes a mistake, and I've done this with people where they were really, you know, chomping at the bit to get going, and I let them determine the course of how we go through the work rather than God, and ultimately it blew up in both our faces. And for some of those people, I had to make amends for that. So I sit and let God determine how we move. I'd like to skip down a couple of paragraphs, and it says, or two paragraphs down, it says, if he's sincerely interested and wants to see you again, ask him to read this book in the interval. After doing that, he must decide for himself what he wants to go on. He should not be pushed or prodded by you, his wife, or his friends. If he is to find God, the desire must come from within. I had shared about this gentleman. We 12-stepped him like three times in, 24 hours. And then he finally went to a detox and signed himself out after 2 days. And his family was pushing him to get sober. His family, with a loving heart, was pushing me to get him sober. He wanted to continue to drink, and I tried every approach, every angle, and so did a couple of other friends. And I don't know where he is right now. The desire to find God must come from within, and that comes when we hit that bitter end, that lucid interval that happens to every one of us, and the hand of God, which at first seems to be a flimsy reed, like for another alcoholic offering help. At that lucid interval, we need to be ready to grab and pull that drunk out. Because when somebody's at that bitter end, my experience has been proven to me, especially by watching what goes on around me, if I give that guy or woman who's in a state of obsession but wanting so desperately to stop drinking will do anything, and I tell them, well, just put the plug in the jug, I just signed their death warrant with that statement. Because they're drinking. Maybe they'll get grace and hold on for a day or two. But I just told them to use their willpower to stop drinking when they don't have any. I asked them to use their sick mind to overcome their sick mind. No solution and put the plug in the jug. Make 90 meetings in 90 days, and that person is hoping to hold on for one more hour. And I come across so arrogant and say, make 90 meetings in 90 days. Maybe the person who says that forgot what it's like to go from hour to hour to hour. That's why God blessed me with people who sat me down and says, we're going to get you past this. And this is how you do it. And they were sure, and they disturbed me every time I sat with them. But I knew they were serving truth. Not some wishy-washy, go home and read page 449 tonight. You go home and read page 449 because I'm going to get drunk. That's all you can offer in Alcoholics Anonymous. See the responsibility we have? Mm-hmm. Okay. Next paragraph says, if he thinks he can do the job in some other way or prefers some other spiritual approach, encourage him to follow his own conscience. We have no monopoly on God. We merely have an approach that works with us. But point out that we alcoholics have much in common, and you would like, in any case, to be friendly, let it go with that. Page 96, a page that was a tough lesson for me. Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. I would hang in there with that guy and not hear the many knocking on the door, because I wanted it more for him than he wanted it. You know, there was an emotional attachment to this person. And I'd hang in there and hang in there and hang in there and get attached to the person, thinking I was responsible for their recovery. And they were banging on my back door and I couldn't hear them. And that's difficult to cut someone loose and let them be. It says, search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you have to offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced that he cannot recover by himself and that he may have to go out and get drunk again. That convincer where all self-reliance is removed, all reservations are removed. Where now they show up, like I did. Okay, I'll do anything. To spend too much time on any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. One of our fellowship failed entirely with his first half dozen prospects. He often said that if he continued work on them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance. Suppose now you're making your second visit to the man. He has read this volume, is prepared to go through the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Not make 90 meetings in 90 days. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you're available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story. But do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. Next page, page 97. This is what we do. First paragraph. Second sentence is, helping others is the foundation stone of our recovery, of your recovery, of my recovery. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. We have to act a good Samaritan every day if need be. And we can have some fun with the rest of this stuff here. So we do all this work, right? And we're doing our meetings, and we're working with others, and we're praying to God, and we're having a spiritual experience, and we did all this work, and we're praying to God, and this is what we get. You ready? It may mean the loss of many nights' sleep, great interference with your pleasures, interruptions to your business. It may mean sharing your money, your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to the police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, asylums. Your phone may jangle at any time of the day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. A drunk may smash the furniture in your home or even burn a mattress. This is what we got to look forward to, right? You may have to fight with him if he is violent. Sometimes you will have to call a doctor and administer sedatives under his direction. Another time you may have to send for the police or an ambulance. Occasionally, you will have to meet such conditions. Then they tell us, we seldom allow this alcoholic to live in our homes for a long time. It is not good for him and sometimes creates serious complications in the family. I've encountered some of that stuff. And I was sharing with a gentleman earlier. If I show up and they're on medication, serious medication, and I'm not sure if they're going to go into convulsions or whatever, real simple, I call 911, where medical people will come in and take care of that. This one gentleman locked himself in a house, locked himself in a hotel room. And we knew he was on a death mission. He was in deep depression. He talked about suicide. We couldn't get in. So we told the hotel manager to call 911. When we couldn't get into his house, we called 911. I mean, that's what we do. That's what I do. If there's danger to the family, I call 911. If he's in danger to himself or herself, I call 911 and get professional doctors in there, medical people, and get him into or her into a hospital. and they'll treat them, and then I show up, or we show up. I've had the loss of night's sleep. I've had my phone ring in the middle of the night. And it's been many times, you know, my plans and designs for the day were interrupted because someone was in desperate trouble. And I've seen a couple of those guys who call me, and I've gone out there, and they're no longer with us because they went back out and drank again. So I don't deny that. So what I've come to a place, though, is to know that I'm taking these principles into my home, if I'm lucky enough to have a home, right, into my home occupation affair. And so I don't deny my family either. And I need to find that place. I need to take care of my family now, my wife or the girlfriend or the children or whatever. I need to nurture them and be with them and spend time with them. And so it's a balance that I've learned how to do. The phone rings late at night and someone's on the other end in desperate trouble. I'm not going to speak to them about, you know, the Yankees this week playing, you know, baseball at 2 o'clock in the morning. I won't do it. I have a family. But if they're in trouble and they're looking to drink, I'll go in the next room and take the phone call and sit with them. And if I have to run out and go get them, I'll call up another alcoholic and go get them and explain to my family, this is what's going on. Are you okay with this? It's really important that I comfort my family when that other person is in major discomfort. I say, okay, you know, I'm the AA hero. See ya. I'm going out there. Because I may have to visit some sordid neighborhoods, and my family's concerned about that. Bring an alcoholic into my home. I better get consent from the family before I just show up with Drunken Joe. Hey, we're here. Where's dinner? He's going to sleep on the couch, you know. I have no right to do that stuff. A book talks about knowing when and how to give. And sometimes in giving, I hurt. Okay. Bottom of page 97, I love this. It says, for the type of alcoholic who's able and willing to get well, little charity in the ordinary sense of the word is needed or wanted. The men who cry for money and shelter before conquering alcohol are on the wrong track. Because once we conquer alcohol and we wake up, like myself, a lot of us can use a helping hand in different areas of our life. But when that stuff's on the table before I get over the drinking deal, usually there's a problem. Yet we do go to great extremes to provide each other with these very things when such action is warranted. And that's a warning. This may seem inconsistent, but we think it is not. And if we've worked with enough people, you know exactly what they're talking about. It says it is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcohol commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. I'd like to stop there for a second. One of the first things my sponsor told me, Mark, when I sat with him, he says, my job is to get you as independent of me as quick as possible and dependent on God as quick as possible. And I heard he didn't like me. He's from Texas. I'm from New York. I talk funny, so he's looking at, you know, give me the brush off. And that's what I thought in this deal for 14, 15 years. Right? And then he explained to me why, and it made perfect sense. I could understand that because I was brought up in sponsorship my first handful of years in here where sponsoring God was synonymous. There was great dependence upon sponsor. Now, at the beginning, sure, I needed that. How do I tie my shoes? Should I have coffee? You know, should I shower now? That's where I was. But then we start to wake up and we really don't need that. There should be a shift where it's about God. So that was new to me, and turned out to be a wonderful experience. Because that has allowed me to turn to other people for help in many different areas. People very near and dear to me in my life who were civilians. One person in particular who I turned to. What do I do here? I don't know what to do. I need help getting through tonight. Can you help me? That's freedom. It says, he clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, We simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. Burn. I'd like you to circle that word. Burn. The idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. And you can underline the rest of that. New person gets sober. All of a sudden, the home life is in disarray and they're blaming them. And if she would only do this, I can get to my meetings. If she would only do that, if my kids, if my, you know, it goes on and on and on. Or we'll hear, I went out, I wish I had a dollar for every time I heard this one, I went out on a relationship. Right? Well, were you drinking without a relationship? Yeah, so the relationship suddenly caused you to go get drunk. You know, we didn't go out on a relationship. You went out because you were untreated. And you have no power, choice, or control over that. So some of us come into Alcoholics Anonymous and start complaining about the family that we've made the situation the way it is. And we're depending on them to do certain things so I can get sober. The only condition is that he trusts in God and clean house. Page 99. Bottom of the page. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. That's three times they mentioned this. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. Three times they threw this out in about two pages. We have seen men get well whose families have not returned at all. We have seen others slip when the family came back too soon. Both you and a new man, me and a new man, must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands, I'd like you to underline the statement, were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. And I experienced that in here. And I've shared this many times that in Alcoholics Anonymous, the past year I've experienced some things were really, really unpleasant. Things were dumped in my lap. And I said, Lord, you're not listening to me. And I had my moments of fear and doubt and this inner conflict and the inner dialogue. And all I knew how to do was, after getting angry with this power, is turning back to him. And he allowed me to sit with other people and ask for help. Not only with my sponsor. In the middle of all of it, I get moved to go through to work again. I'm like, God, you know, maybe you need a sponsor. What are you doing? And I get moved to go through to work again in the middle of all of this. But the dots are being connected for me. So I've experienced that I turn it over to this power who knows so much better than me. If anyone's new, or has been coming to this deal, or here for the first time, or you know, you're new and making meetings, and you're in that new place where it's churning and you're vibrating and you're not sure which end is up, but you have a sponsor who's doing this deal, and he or she is going to walk you through this. God's going to take you through this and pull you through the archway. There's going to be times, I bet, like what many of us can testify to, you're going to have doubt, like your sponsor has lost it this time. This big book is written for other people. God has no idea what he's doing. And we get so attached to the outcome. Am I really going to recover? From my experience, I will share, these are precious, precious days. The first days of waking up. Those beginning days, you will look back on them and realize how wonderful they were, as difficult as they are right now. Because you will look back to days when your sponsor go home and read something out of the book, and we're going to have some spiritual homework out of this book, and we go home and we write, not knowing where it's going to take us. And we call our sponsor because they tell us to call them. And we hook up with the sponsor at a meeting. And we throw questions at the sponsor, and they have the answer for us. And we visit these workshops, and the vibrating is going on, we're wondering. And then we get past that, and we look back on these days. And you'll realize how precious they were. I remember sitting and writing my fourth step, and I had this, it was a bookshelf that someone gave to me. I never used it, but I made it into a desk because that's all I had. And this little lamp. My brother gave me a lamp. And I was writing my fourth step. I'm looking out this window, this little apartment I had, and having no idea where I was going. But I was told to write if I wanted to overcome alcoholism. I didn't want to drink anymore. I was dying. God kept pushing the pen. That was a long time ago. And it was precious. It was sacred. There was nothing except me and God in this book that I was writing in. So if you knew, I promise you, they're great days. They're painful. I know they are. We know they are. But just say, I'm in pain. This is where I'm at. And keep moving. Great days. And then we get to the other side. And because of that, we can sit with another alcoholic and say, I know where you're at. I've been in the cave. Just follow me out. Just hold on. Okay. Bottom of page 100. Assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go to their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. That's a pretty big shield. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. Listen to what our book's going to tell us. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with the spiritual status. I was in treatment. My family came to visit me in Minnesota for family week, and I was separated just a short time, a couple of weeks, and my family was out to take me out on this pass. And we went to a restaurant. My dad showed up with his wife and went to a restaurant, and as soon as you walk in, there's a bar. And it was like I got hit with a tidal wave. I think I knew everything that the bar had on it in like just a glance. My mouth was warm. I was foaming, you know. And I couldn't eat. You know, I tried to eat and be social, and I was thinking the bar. And I wanted to stay sober. Well, here's what happened. We go through this stuff. I've gone to weddings. I've gone to parties. I've gone out and socialized. When I was married, there was wine in my home. Which was a problem for the other person. I had no desire to drink any of it. I wasn't drawn to it. I wasn't running away from it. The 10-step promises delivered themselves. I'd gone to weddings, and I knew when it was time to leave. Not because I was drawn to alcohol, but if you go to those things, you know there's a certain time where there's a shift in the party. And it's usually when you hear this, we need to get together again, you know. That's the time. So, you know when it's time to leave. And so I visited these places, okay, where liquor was around me, and I was really okay with it. I was moved to be in fit spiritual condition. And that's a great thing. I don't have to hide out. I can go pack into the nation and enjoy life. Do I have preferences about where I go? Yeah. I'd rather not be around liquor or people who are drunk. That's my preference. But people drink, and I socialize sometimes. So be it. Okay? An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There's something the matter with his or her spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would someplace like the Greenland ice cap, and even there an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on a theory he would escape the alcohol problem. In our belief, any scheme of combating alcoholism which proposed to shield the sick man from temptation is doomed to failure. And we talked about that at the very beginning of this. I went on a trip one time, really far from where I was living, and my hope was I was going to get to this island, and I was going to not drink and clean up the other things I was taking. I showed up to the hotel very drunk. So that went by the wayside as soon as I hit the airport. And I was in the lobby. I figured, well, I can't get my hands on other kind of substances. And I was in the lobby probably under 5 minutes, and I took care of that. So shielding us really doesn't work. But we wake up, and we can go anywhere and get free. So you'll hear in Alcoholics Anonymous a very big lie. You know, if you're thinking about a drink, it's normal because you're an alcoholic. Well, are we thinking, are we in a state of obsession, are we thirsty? Because I can tell you, I've been in here a while doing this, and I've experienced difficult times in Alcoholics Anonymous and very joyous ones, and my mind never said, let's get a drink to wash the night away. Let's go get a drink to celebrate the joy. Okay. Some of us get thinking thoughts and they're gone, like it's coupled with sanity and it's gone. You may experience that. But doing this deal, the obsession has been removed. The problem has been removed. We're placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Okay. Page 102. Second paragraph from the bottom, it says, your job. It says, our job is now to be at a place where you can be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth, and sometimes that sordid spot is a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep us unharmed. Page 103 says, after all, our problems were of our own making. Bottles were only a symbol. Besides, we have stopped fighting anybody or anything. We have to. We take these principles into my home, and the question we can sit with after learning about working with others, how to work with others, some very general guiding principles on how to work with other alcoholics, and some very specific principles on how to work with another alcoholic. We've had this awakening. We go carry this message to drunks. What am I doing about practicing these principles in the rest of my affairs? How am I doing with that stuff? It's a question I ask you to sit with. Am I the AA angel in the house devil? And I'm not talking about falling short in thought, word, and deed. But how am I doing with that stuff? Taking these principles when we leave here tonight home, am I bringing joy to other people the way Alcoholics Anonymous brings joy to me? There's something I wanted to close with. And it's on page 162, very bottom. It says, thus we grow, and so can you. Though you be but one man with this book in your hand, or one woman with this book in your hand, we believe and hope it contains all you will need to begin. We know what you are thinking. You are saying to yourself, I'm jittery and alone. I couldn't do that. But you can. You forget that you have just now tapped a source of power much greater than yourself. To duplicate with such backing what we have accomplished is only a matter of willingness, patience, and labor. Page 164. Last paragraph says, abandon ourselves to God as we understand him. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And we will experience the spirit of this fellowship. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. And from the bottom of my heart, again, I thank all of you for being there for me. Thanks.